How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here every day, Monday through Friday, noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sundays, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. Big day here on the show today. I am running solo. Mike Sempervivi is unavailable today. He'll be back tomorrow, but fear not. We have got plenty of stuff to get into here today. The first segment's likely going to be all news. We got a lot of it. A lot of news coming out of SmackDown. Update on Neville that we kind of talked about a little bit yesterday. And a lot more. If you want to give us your thoughts on the SmackDown show, you're welcome to text them in here today. No phone calls today, too much stuff going on. But if you want to text in, 425-780-7566 is the phone number. That is 425-780-7566 if you want to send text. SmackDown, Neville, whatever is on your mind. We've also got two guests coming on today. Yesterday we were supposed to have Sami Callihan on the show, but didn't work out. Fear not. He's going to be on today. Also, in the second segment of the show, we're going to be joined by Eli Drake. So, two huge guests to talk with today. And, of course, many subjects, including Impact Wrestling, Global Force Wrestling. I mean, Eli Drake is the champion of the world. In fact, yeah, the world. Global Force Wrestling. He's the world champion there. I was thinking maybe they had a universal name or something. And, of course, Sami Callihan, Lucha Underground. We got 2 weeks left of Ultima Lucha Trace and also some AAW to talk about. So that's the plan for today. As noted, a lot of news to get into. The future of Neville in WWE remains uncertain. Sources confirmed that Neville walked out before Raw on Monday and appeared to have quit the promotion, although WWE has officially denied that he has quit. Monday's Raw featured Kalisto winning the Cruiserweight title from Enzo Amore in a Lumberjack match. Neville did not appear as one of the Lumberjacks. He was not on 205 Live this week. As we talked about on yesterday's show, Neville was originally going to face Enzo on that show, and he was not going to win the title. He then walked out. Then they switched the match. Kalisto won. Don't expect him to be a long-term champion, but that's what happened. We can talk more about this and much more after the break. Wrestling Observer Live. We're back in the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. No Mike Sempervivi here today, but we got a lot of guests coming up on the show, so fear not. Eli Drake coming on in the second segment of the show. And in the final segment, Sami Callihan. A lot of stuff to talk about with both of those guys here today. Got a lot of text messages already about news the last couple of days. So let's get into them, because it all plays into what we've been talking about here. This person says, Ricochet for Neville seems to be a fair trade. Well, first off, there's no guarantee Ricochet is coming in. I do expect him to sign with the company, but he will almost certainly go through NXT, and I don't think that he should be a cruiserweight star. It's pretty clear now with the departure of Austin Aries and potentially the departure of Neville. We don't know that for sure, but certainly a lot of rumors he's asked for his release. He definitely walked out on Raw. I mean, it's pretty clear there's problems with this 205 Live. We've known about it forever. We've talked about it forever. But I think that after this one, it's possible that maybe the company's figured out, huh, something's not going right with this division here. So we'll see what the fallout is. But as noted, Neville appears to have walked out. We'll see if he comes back. He was not on 205 Live. He was not on Raw. He was in the opening video package for 205 Live, so they did not remove him from that. Either because they didn't have time or because they figure that they can still retain him. But that's what's going on with Neville. Now, on SmackDown last night, a lot of weird stuff going on. I know this happens every week, but it's just been more obvious the last couple of weeks. So, as we mentioned on Monday, I mean, the Neville situation kind of threw a monkey wrench in everything, but I mean, originally on Monday, it was going to be first a six-person match, that women's match that they had. It was going to be a six-person, then it was going to be a three-way, and then it became the five-way. And then originally they were going to do the Neville match with Enzo Amore. Neville walked out. They put Kalisto in there. And because it was Eddie Guerrero's birthday, I guess they figured we'll give Kalisto a short run and see where we go from here. So that's the big change on Monday. Then on Tuesday, and I bring this up because it's kind of weird, and also because it is perpetually brought to my attention when I bring things up and they don't happen. that I'm making up stories, when in reality, as I mentioned all the time, plans change all the time. Here's one you can actually see with your own eyes. If you watched SmackDown last week, they announced that, before that, they announced over a week ago that the Fashion Files were going to return on SmackDown on Tuesday. This was last Tuesday. If you watched SmackDown, there was no Fashion Files. They actually flat out said on the show, well, Fashion Files was going to be today, but now it's going to be on Sunday instead. So they announced it would be on Sunday. There was another Fashion Files on Sunday. And on Sunday, they announced that on Tuesday, Fashion Files Pulp Fiction was going to air on SmackDown. Well, if you saw the show, Fashion Files Pulp Fiction did not air on SmackDown because they changed their minds again and they decided to put Breezango in that tag team deal. Now, in the afternoon before the show started, the Fashion Files was going to take place. They tape it the day of the show, and they were going to do a tag team match where the winners were going to get a shot at the title. It's going to be like New Day and Jordan and Gable, who ended up winning the thing on Tuesday. That was the original idea, but then they decided, we'll do this five-way, we'll get all these teams out here instead. And as a result, they scrapped the Fashion Files. The Fashion Files are not, I mean, they're pre-taped, but it's not like they're taped weeks in advance. They tape them the day of the show. So that got all changed around. And I think those were the major changes on SmackDown last night. But these shows are now being rewritten as the show goes on. Afternoon of the show as the show goes on. And for better or worse, that's what's happening. Now, why? Why the Fashion Files is one of the most popular segments on the show, and they bring back the guys, and they're just beaten in their first match back? I have no idea. They could have beaten the Hype Bros, they could have beaten the Ascension, they could have beaten anybody. But they brought them out, and they beat Breezango. So, I don't know what that means, but, I mean, to me it means they're not that high on those two guys, despite those two doing such great segments on SmackDown. We also got this from Raw. Oh, no, before we go to Raw. Also on SmackDown last night. Did you see the debut of the Bludgeon Brothers? After all this time, they have finally brought back Harper and Rowan, and they are back as the Bludgeon Brothers. They had this weird segment backstage where literally it was like the two guys were getting ready to go out for Halloween. They're standing there with these hoods on, and they're holding these giant, mallets? Is that what you'd call it? Like giant mallets? And they've got their hoods on, and eerie music is playing, and they cut a promo. There is no conscience. There's no moral compass. The virtuous will fall. The wicked will rise. Broken bones. Severed spines. Harper, Rowan, Bludgeon Brothers. I laughed so hard. I laughed and laughed and laughed. And then, because it's WWE, they show the guys and they make them spit out their line. And then they leave the camera on them for an uncomfortable period of time. You're just looking at them and you're looking at them and they're staring at you and they got their wide eyes and they've got their mallets and they're just looking at you, and finally they cut away. And I thought, how in the world did these two guys not just die of laughter? But yes, the Bludgeon Brothers have debuted again in WWE, part of this SmackDown Tag Team Division, which is on fire. And I guess, let me look at the calendar. September, October, look at that. The Halloween edition of SmackDown falls on Halloween. It's on the 31st. And so I guess we're going to get two more weeks of vignettes. And unless plans change, as we've been talking about, they will make their big debut on Thanksgiving night. The Bludgeon Brothers. They're on SmackDown. It was amazing. Do you hear me? It was amazing. Going back to Raw very quickly, the Raw ratings. Looks like Enzo kind of helped this week. And granted, by kind of helped, I mean the third hour still did 2.71 million viewers, which is pretty terrible. But it was better than the third hour did last week. It was still by far the lowest rated hour of the three, which has been happening here. First hour, 3.0, 1 million. Second hour, 2.89. Third hour, 2.71. So they helped a little bit. The show overall, 4.6% up from last week, where basically they were, I guess, according to the Observer website here, my website, last night's show did 2.89 million, up 4.6% increase on a show that, based on the competition, figured to do the lowest mark of the fall. So I don't know how they predicted that, because let me tell you something. As the fall season goes on, I mean, we have plenty of opportunities to hit historic lows. I mean, that time is not over. But those are the numbers there for Raw. A couple of other notes here. Somebody had a very good question, which I don't have the answer to. Where was Jinder? So if you watched the pay-per-view, Jinder Mahal pinned Shinsuke Nakamura clean in the middle, basically. I mean, there was a little bit of interference from the Singh brothers, but I mean, he pinned the guy. He beat the guy. And the question was, well, what do we do now? Where do we go? Is the Nakamura thing over? Who is Jinder going to defend against next? I mean, everyone's conclusion, which, I mean, it makes sense after Sunday, was, well, they did that three-way. They added Ty Dillinger. Clearly, he was put in there. I mean, I mentioned on Twitter, he was in there to have a better match. I had people say, no, he was in there because we could not have AJ do a job. Well, he, in fact, got pinned. AJ did not do a job. And lo and behold, last night on SmackDown, as I'd figured, they did a rematch, a singles rematch, of AJ and Baron Corbin. And Baron Corbin beat this guy clean in the middle of the ring. He pinned him 1-2-3. I mean, there was no underhanded anything. He just pinned the guy. And so, I don't know if AJ's next in line for the title shot. I don't know who is. I don't know what's going on. But yeah, no Jinder on the show. And speaking of shows, we're going to head to a break. And when we get back, a world champion is going to be here on the line. Eli Drake. Back in a moment. Wrestling Observer Live. We're back in the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. We are joined by Eli Drake here today, who is, in fact, that's right, current GFW Global Champion. The Global Championship is yours, Eli Drake.
That's right, although I think we're going to call that Impact Global Champion at this point.
That's right. Like, this is all, I mean this in the nicest way possible, this is kind of a mess right here. Like, we had Impact, then Global Force, then something happened with Jarrett, then we got all these press releases where they stopped saying Global Force. But, I mean, technically you're still the Global Force champion, but now it's the Impact champion. So,
yeah, it's a whole thing that I don't know a lot of the intricate details of it, but at this point it's kind of just I show up, I kick ass as best I can, and I collect my check, and I continue to make the product as good as I possibly can on my own and with the others around me.
Now, how have things, I mean, obviously things have changed for you in a positive way over the last couple of years, but I mean, in general, I mean, how, you mentioned that you just show up for work, but I mean, there's got to be some, I mean, how has it affected you, like, has it affected you at all behind the scenes? There has to be a little bit, no?
Well, I tell you what, I'm starting to think the whole thing's a work, because it seems like every year, the past 3 years, just before Bound for Glory, there's some sort of controversy about the company and the status of it and all that kind of stuff. I feel a lot more confident about it this time around. I know last year it was a little scary. The year before it was scary. But especially being newer to the company at those times, I think that it was kind of, I heard those rumors and heard those things. And some of it was true as far as last year, where Dixie was shopping for a new owner. But at this point, I do trust in the fact that Ed does seem very committed to the product. He seems very committed in turning it around and making it better. And so I'm not really super worried about it. And even if I was, what's that going to do for me? So at this point, it's just kind of put on the best face I can as far as it's concerned and just keep moving.
I mean, at this point, I would think the positive with Anthem running the company is, I would presume that your checks are on time pretty much every single time now. I mean, there's
that is true,
little concern of this of Anthem going out of business here. I mean, were you one of the guys that were having issues back when Dixie was running the company where you weren't getting paid on time?
Not really. I mean, maybe if it was literally maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks. Like, I know some guys were saying they were way behind, or at least that was the rumor. I didn't experience that, although I'm in a completely different situation. Some of those guys have families, so, like, they need those checks right then. I'm a single guy, so, like, I'm only supporting me, which is wonderful. So if a check comes a week late or 2 weeks late, I'm not really hurting that much. So it's okay. Not that if Anthem's listening, that doesn't mean send my checks late. I mean, I'm still...
That's better. Right. That's right.
But,
and hey, you made all that money on Hero.
Exactly.
Sure, that paid for years of house payments right there. Now, what were your thoughts when you found out that I mean, obviously everything went down and they needed a new champion, and they did the gauntlet match and you won. I mean, did you have any inkling going in that there's going to be a big change and I'm going to be the guy here?
No, I didn't. Because I have voiced some frustrations in the past with my positioning and how it was used, and I feel like I have a particular skill set that warrants a higher position. I don't mean to say that with any sense of entitlement, but in the fact that over the years I've honed a particular craft with it, whether that's promos or whatever. I'm not a technical wizard by any means, but I don't think you have to be when you've got good character. If you look at the guys who've been uber successful in the past, you look at The Rock or Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan, even a Ric Flair, who's probably the most technical of any of them, maybe Steve Austin second there, but it's all about the character. If you can talk the people into the match, if you can talk the people into that feud or whatever's going on, I think that's the key. And with that sense, I think that that's something that I have. It's something that I carry, and that's something that I offer. And so I was a little bit frustrated with things going forward, so I didn't think that there was a possible chance in hell that I was going to be that guy going forward. But things moved right in place, and here I am.
So the big Bound for Glory show is November 5th. Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. It's going to be a pay-per-view. And at the moment, the main event is you and Johnny Impact for the GFW Global title. And I don't know how much of Johnny Impact you watch outside of Impact, but, I mean, he's all over Lucha Underground. He's in Mexico. He is, to me, he is one of the best characters in wrestling today. I mean, as far as just, like, the character he plays and how he plays it, I think he's unbelievable. What are your thoughts on Johnny Impact?
Johnny Impact does a lot of cool stuff. The guy's got a look. He looks like a rock star. There's a feeling to him, for sure. And aside from that, like I said, he's got a lot of crazy parkour stuff going on, a lot of gymnastics type of training and things like that, and it all shows in the ring, and he finds ways to implement it just right. So, I mean, and like you said, the character's there, so... I think that when you put the two together, and I don't know if you guys saw the match that they just had at Victory Road a couple weeks ago, but it was really well put together. And as far as just bringing two personalities together and bringing two athletes together, I don't think it could have been done much better than that. And the good news about that is it's going to be done a lot better than that when we come to Bound for Glory here in a couple weeks.
You've actually been around for a long, long time. I mean, you were there for, like, the original Heartland Wrestling Association and kind of been all over the place. Does it sort of feel like, I mean, you're finally... I mean, there's an old saying, it takes 10 years to be an overnight sensation or something like that. Do you feel that that's kind of the path that you took?
Well, when you say long, long time, you make me sound like an elder statesman here, but... some of it was me shooting myself in the foot at different times. I have a habit of being very free with my thoughts, my opinions on things. And sometimes that's hindered me, sometimes that's helped me. But I had major, massive heat with the office at WWE for a little bit in the name of Ty Bailey. And the day he got fired was a happy day for a lot of people, from what I understand, and particularly me, because then there was a new regime for me to get in touch with over there. And so finally, that's when I got a look, and that's when I got over there. But then you run into a guy like Bill DeMott, and things get ugly again. So it was frustrating, although at the same time, now it's like major vindication. And in my promo, my celebration, the week after I won the title, I kind of dug into some of that, because it is a happy moment in the sense that here I am, global champion, world champion, whatever you want to call it. But the fact that it's 14 years in and it's just happening now, it's just kind of, man, that chaps me. But at the same time, like I said, homeward and upward.
And hey, so, some guys go 14 years and have nothing.
Exactly, 100%. And I know guys who, you know, they're on the local indie scene for 20 years and they talk about their time in the business, which, you know, I don't know how you last that long when you're a local indie guy, but do what you do.
You ever sit there and do long car rides with EC3 and swap stories of the days in developmental and these terrible times that you lived through?
Well, I mean, I've heard plenty from there because we were in different eras of it. I was in the very first incarnation of the Performance Center, and he was there for FCW, and it was kind of two different beasts. But hearing some of his stories and then comparing notes to some of mine, it's different but similar in a lot. And a lot of it, the common denominator and all that, Bill DeMott.
So you've had the opportunity to do some stuff in Japan, NOAH. You had a match with Cody Hall recently. I mean, is this, what are your thoughts on Japan? I mean, is this something for down the road you'd like to do more work over there? Are you happy here in the U.S.? What are your short-term goals?
Man, I've wanted to be in Japan for a while, actually, and going over there was a different experience. Just getting used to that crowd and get a feel for a different sense of how to work and things like that, and just adapting to that scenario. I really, really dug it. And being able to see that scene and see the other guys and how they're working, what they're doing, stuff like that, it's amazing. And now I want to get to Europe. I want to get, go back to Japan. As many places as I can get my face, that's where I want to be. And the experience is key. So, a lot of guys get stuck in the bubble. I love the U.S. I love the U.S. fans. I love the European fans. But there's something special about going to a new place and getting in front of those people and seeing how they react and learning to adapt to that situation.
As noted, the Bound for Glory show is coming up on November 5th on pay-per-view. And, of course, Impact Wrestling on Pop TV can check that out as well. And Eli, let's get some plugs in here for yourself, some social media, and whatever else you want to get out there.
Well, you can find me at The Eli Drake on Twitter and Instagram. I just started a YouTube channel, but it's coming up very slowly. It's the official Eli Drake YouTube. And ProWrestlingTees.com/Eli Drake. And I've got two new t-shirts, possibly a third one coming here very soon on Shop Impact.
So check that out. And of course, Pop TV. And Eli, I want to thank you so much for doing the show here today. And hopefully one of these days we can get you on and go a little bit longer. But I do appreciate it. And make sure you check out Bound for Glory, everybody. As noted, the main event, Eli Drake, Johnny Impact, GFW Global Title, as well as a number of other matches. Ultimate X match, Trevor Lee, Sanjay Dutt, Petey Williams, Matt Sydal, Garza Jr., Desmond Xavier, and a lot more. So Eli, thanks so much for doing the show here today. We're going to head to a break here in just a moment, everybody. And when we come back, Sammy Callahan is going to join us, talking all sorts of topics, including Lucha Underground. Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live. We're back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. We are joined today by, I guess, Sammy Callahan. Sammy, what's going on today?
I'm here. You actually got through to me today. We're making this happen. We're making history.
That's right. And I was thinking about this as I was introducing you. I mean, I guess probably the three most popular names you've worked under would be Sammy Callahan, Jeremiah Crane, Solomon Crowe. I always think Sammy Callahan. I guess today, I mean, what's your most popular character? Like, what do people usually refer to you as when they see you?
Oh, dude, it's Sammy Callahan. Excuse me. I have never had anyone ever try to book me as Solomon Crowe. I've never had anyone try to book me as Jeremiah Crane, because lucky enough on Lucha Underground, I didn't have to wear a mask. You know, it's pretty much myself, just under a different name. And I was lucky enough that before I went to WWE, I built up the name Sammy Callahan, and then as soon as I came back, I went right back to that. So I think everything is just under the Sammy Callahan banner.
I'll talk a little bit about the WWE run here, and then we'll get into Lucha Underground and everything else. And, of course, the upcoming shows, AAW. So, I mean, you were there, and you were on NXT, and, I mean, if you showed somebody your stuff in Lucha Underground, and you showed someone your stuff in NXT, I think their mind would be blown. Like,
yeah, it was not good.
Why is he not doing anything here?
What? And I just think, and like, I never have any ill will towards WWE because, like, there's no reason to. Like, a lot of it was just timing, and they didn't really see what I saw in myself, and they tried to change who I was. And I just walked on eggshells. I never really bet on myself and was relevant enough to just be like, no, this is how this works. This works. And I wish I would have. I wish I would have played it a completely different way because I feel like I would probably be Hunter Rawl or SmackDown right now. But it's one thing, like, and like I said this to Triple H himself, I felt like I was really mismanaged from the time I got there. I was told that I was going to debut right when I got there, and I got there, and I didn't even have a match on a live event for 6 months. And then I was told I was going to debut then, and then I got injured. So that put a damper into things. And then freaking when they finally debuted me, they didn't even tell me. I got pulled into an office like, oh, they're airing your vignettes tonight. I'm like, what vignettes? Like, oh, your one vignette. Oh, the ones that I did a year prior when I looked completely different and we were running with the hacker thing. And they're like, yeah, that. But then they're like, but you're not the hacker. We're just debuting you a cool way like Jericho, but you're not the hacker. But I don't think anyone gave the memo to the writers because the writers would still write promos that I was the hacker. And then there'd be this big disconnect. And Triple H would be like, you look like you don't know who you are out there. I'm like, well, I don't know who I am out there because I was never really given the direction I wish from the get-go. I was just like, did my own stuff. Like, I just wish I was me. And I feel like I'd be in a way different situation.
Just really weird because, like you said, you debuted and then you just, like, did some stuff. And there were some matches. And I was like, what's going on here? Like, it was bizarre. And then you showed up in Lucha Underground and I mean, there have been a few matches where, like, watch these matches, and I think, you know, like, right now, at this exact moment in this match, this guy's, like, the best wrestler in the whole world. And I've said this on the air. I'm not just saying this because you're here right now. I mean, I've just, it's mind-blowing, the difference between, you know, Lucha Underground and NXT. And I would presume that NXT or in Lucha Underground, they just give you, how do they put the matches together? How do they structure it? Do they give you more freedom? Just like, here's a general idea, now just go out there and go nuts.
I got real lucky that they believed in me coming right in. They knew who I was, and all the agents knew who I was and what I did. And they're like, look, like, your character's pretty much just you. We're just going to, like, in the pre-tapes, we'll do some stuff to, like, get over what we want to get over. But in the ring, like, do you. Like, we want you to be vicious. We want you to be violent. Like, and that's something WWE, like, I don't know who was telling who, but some of the coaches at the time, I'm not going to throw names out there, but I remember a meeting I got. I got to wrestle one house show before I didn't wrestle for 6 months, and it was like right when I got there. I was the first guy out of our group of guys to get a house show, and I wrestled Xavier Woods, and it was awesome. And I got to the back, and I got zero credit for it. I was told, oh, Xavier wasn't in that match, this probably would have been a train wreck, and you're way too violent. And I'm like, what? And then I was told they wanted me to, like, make my style more smooth and work more holds and be less violent with my strikes. And, like, I'm like, well, that's kind of not me at all, but I tried to appease everybody, and I tried to make too many people happy instead of trying to make myself happy.
Now let me stop you there. So when they told you that you're too violent, I mean, were you laying it in and hurting guys, or did it just look violent? I mean, isn't the whole idea to make it look violent?
I remember I wrestled Xavier Woods, and Xavier Woods, dude, in my, like, people don't even know how good Xavier Woods is. I'll straight up say he's one of the best guys at the roster, and they don't even, like, now, like, with the New Day stuff is amazing, but that dude can go with anybody. And, like, we had this awesome match. They didn't like my forearms to the back of the head. They said that's too violent for the crowd. They didn't like all my kicks to the head. They said that was too violent for the crowd. They didn't like how aggressive I was. They said I was too aggressive for my size and I need to be more smooth. And then I remember a talk with Triple H later on. He goes, you're not aggressive enough. And I'm like, well, I was told that I was too aggressive, so I really don't know what to do at this point.
That's bizarre. Like, the best part of your stuff is being aggressive and the speed and God, what, Matt? You did the running cannonball over the barricade and went like 16 rows deep, it looked like, and it was just, I don't know, it's weird. It's like, it's wrestling. Isn't the whole idea to make it look violent without actually killing anybody?
Like, I'm not going to lie, when I was younger, man, I was the stiffest SOB out there because I wanted to have that reputation of, like, Samoa Joe. or a super dragon. But the older I got, man, and like when I started wrestling multiple days a week, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't want to be hit. Like, so I pride myself on people like think before they wrestle me, they're like, oh, like they think I'm going to be stiff. Then they wrestle me and they're like, oh my gosh, like you're a complete work. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's the whole point, isn't it?
That's,
like,
that's the idea.
That's my magic.
So,
like,
so
my magic trick. I don't want anyone to know how I do it.
Now, when did you have that transition? Because, I mean, I would presume it would just have been, I don't know, when you just started getting more dates? Or was there something, did someone come up to you, or did you just kind of, like you said, feel it and just decide, man, I got to lighten up?
I felt it, and it was one of those things, like, dude, if you hit someone hard, they're going to hit you hard back. And, like, when everything started coming out on head injuries, like, I got really, like, scared. Was like, wow, I probably had my head rung quite too many times, and I want to have a long career, and I don't want to be a vegetable when I get older. And like, but you got to think, when I came into the business, like in 2005, that's when like the Nigel McGuinnesses and the Samoa Joes and the Necro Butchers and all these guys were the top guys. And like, I wanted to imitate those guys. Like Samoa Joe was one of my biggest influences in wrestling, and I was like, I want to be like that guy, or I want to be like Super Dragon. And then I realized, like, no one really wants to work that style. Like, I think over the past, like, it went from, in 2005, 2006, 2007, that era of, like, we're going to do 100 trade-offs a match and hit each other as hard as we can. And then it kind of changed because, like, I think we all got smart enough to realize, like, yo, we can't be dropping each other on our heads all the time. We can't be bashing each other's heads in all the time. Like, we need to really protect each other. And, like, that's one thing that I pride myself in now. Like, I'm really big on, like, if you watch my style now, like, I don't want to take a lot of stuff on my head. I don't want to take a lot of implant bumps because I've gotten hurt doing that stuff. And, like, I don't want to get hurt no more. But people really don't realize it because I've gotten really good over the past couple years of my style of just being controlled chaos. And that's something that Necro Butcher taught me. Like, outside of his deathmatch stuff, that man was amazing. Like, and people don't realize how good Necro was and how smart he really was. But the things he did shortened his career and, like, really shortened his body. But, like, he taught me how to do this controlled chaos where people think it's completely out there and you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going to happen, but it's all in, like, this controlled, like, formula that we have. Like, I want to be that guy where people think I might hit a fan. They think I might end up in the third row. They don't know what I'm going to do. But, like, at the end of the day, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm real meticulous of exactly how I plan everything out.
You know, I have seen a lot of matches where, you know, in the old days, like, if a guy started to go into the crowd, people would just scatter in fear. And now you can watch these shows and, like, a wrestler
now
would threaten...
people want to flip you off and make fun of you.
Yeah, they'll laugh at you. They laugh in your face and they think it's hilarious. And I did see one match on Lucha Underground where, like, Matanza was going crazy, and there were actually people getting out of the way. And I was like, okay, finally we got somebody here that, like, you know, he's actually intimidating the fans. But, yeah, I think that's part of the key is you gotta make them believe. I mean, this is, I don't know why I'm even talking about this, but, like, you gotta make them believe but not kill anybody. Anyway.
Absolutely.
So Lucha Underground, I mean, we got two episodes left here, and then who knows? And I presume, I mean, I don't think you'd...
I don't know. No one knows. Like, and that's the problem. Like, I love Lucha Underground, but, like, right now it's a really hard spot to be in because we haven't recorded anything in over a year and a half. We haven't got paid in over a year and a half. And some of us, like, we're at the pinnacle of our career, and, like, we're not making that TV money right now, and we're having to, like, kill ourselves on the indies to make ends meet. And, like, that's where it's, like, that's, like, where the real damper is. Like, we all believe in Lucha Underground, but right now that's, like, the real harp on things that we don't know what the future is. We haven't been given a date. Like, I believe they are going to film a fourth season, but we don't know when that's going to happen.
Now, is there something in everybody's contract where, I mean, I presume they can't hold you for, like, 10 years of not taping. I mean, is there, if there is no fourth season... I mean, within like a year or so, I mean, I don't know what the no compete is, but you'd be open to doing other things? You'd have that ability?
I think absolutely. And like right now, I'm not going to go into it, but you never know where Sami Callihan is going to show up. Like that's one thing I've always prided myself on. I'm being that enigma of like, you never know where Sami Callihan is going to show up or what he's going to do. And I'll tell you, like coming up in the next couple months, I have a couple really cool things planned.
All right, tell us about these AAW shows you got coming up.
Dude, AAW, I was part of AAW before I went to the WWE, but since I came back, I'm not taking all the credit, but I like to, people call me the draw there, and the fans have, like, really put that invested interest in me. But, like, since I came back and it was my first place, I showed up there 3 days after I quit WWE, and I did that on purpose. Like, when I quit WWE, like, I had everything planned out exactly when I was going to quit because I knew where I was going to show up. And I knew showing up at that show, one of the biggest shows of the year, was going to create buzz, and it kind of set them on fire. And now I feel like, if you haven't seen AAW, I feel like they're the top indie company on the planet right now. They have one of the best rosters and some of the most compelling storytelling and storylines out there right now. And every building they run sells out. They'll run a small 400-seat building, sell out. They'll run a 1,000-seat building, sell out. But, like, they're selling out every show, and they're doing big things. And this weekend is kind of their version of Bola, the Jim Lynham Invitational Tournament. And it has some of the best guys from all over the world coming to compete for 2 days. And I wasn't able to be a part of it last year because I was facing Pentagon for the World Heavyweight Championship. But since I lost the belt to Phoenix a couple months ago, I was able to enter myself into it this year, and I'm really looking forward to it.
What can you tell us about Jim?
Jim, I cut a promo on about him over the weekend, and I said Jim was like the attitude and the embodiment of what AAW wants to be. Like, he was the voice of AAW. He was everything that AAW stood for, and I like to kind of consider myself, like, now that's me. Like, the attitude AAW wants to present is my attitude, is my way of looking at wrestling. Like, it's not one way. Like, we can have 1,000 different types of wrestling because not one way is proper. This truly is wrestling for our generation, by our generation, and I've coined that for my company, Wrestling Revolver, but that's kind of a catchphrase a lot of our guys, like, live by now. Like, this is wrestling for our generation, by our generation. There's some indie wrestlers making six figures a year with T-shirts and action figures and deals with Hot Topics. Like, right now, being an indie wrestler, like, we're truly showing that you don't have to be part of that WWE machine to be successful. Like, we're able to make very successful livings outside of WWE.
Very quickly, what are your thoughts on the Air-Fox match that you had this past weekend?
Oh, everyone's saying it's one of the best matches in AAW this year. And I can't wait to watch it when it comes out. Like, A.R. Fox is, if I had to wrestle one guy the rest of my life, it'd be A.R. Fox. He's the yin to my yang. We grew up together in this business, and we had some of our best matches, and we put each other on the map. But, like, now, like, we're both at different points in our career, and we understand things a lot better than when we did when we were younger.
All right, well, stand by. We'll be back in just a moment with more Wrestling Observer Live. We're back here on the show. Brian Alvarez here, Wrestling Observer Live. Very quickly, it's right, he's back. Sammy Callahan's here. Friday, October 13th, Saturday, October 14th, the Jim Lynham Memorial Tournament, the Berwyn Eagles Club, Berwyn, Illinois. There are tickets available, but you probably should check it out quickly because front row sold out, second row sold out, second row stage sold out, and get third row and general admission still. So Google AAW, all the information you need is up there. And Sammy, let's get some plugs in for your stuff here. Social media, whatever else you've got coming up.
Awesome. Check me out on social media at the Sammy Callahan. Also, check out my company. We have a bunch of big shows coming up called the Wrestling Revolver. You can check us out on Twitter at PW Revolver or our website, www.prowrestlingrevolver.com.
We should do a show again and talk about PW Revolver because, I mean, there's... I guess it's better today, but like in the old days, the idea of actually promoting wrestling was just crazy. Like it was just, you were doomed to fail, but now they're...
We're selling out buildings right now. WrestleMania weekend, we had pancakes and pile drivers that drew over 1,000 people. Sold out building in Ohio. I've built up this building in Iowa that our last show drew 750, and this show we have way more pre-sale than we've ever had going into a show, so we're looking to break 1,000 in Iowa this time. This show alone has Ricochet, Jessica Havoc, Tessa Blanchard, Dave and Jay Chris, myself, Brian Cage, Joey Ryan, Candice LeRae, Jack Swagger. The list goes on and on and on and on. We're doing some really cool things, and like we're really showing what our generation can do with wrestling.
Well, check it out, everybody. Thanks so much, Sammy. PW Revolver on Twitter. We are totally out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening today. Callers, listeners, everybody in the studio. Talk to you again next time. Wrestling Observer Live.